Okay, so again, Vishnu Sahasranama, the 145, the 145th Nama. Jagadadi Jaha. It's the 145.
145.
The name.
145.
Jagadadi Jaha. Find it?
Yes.
Okay. So repeat after me. Jagadadi Jaha. Then, well, Jagad means the world, the universe. Adi means the Adi Jaha, firstborn. Adi means first in this case. Adi Jaha means firstborn. So Jagad Adi Jaha. Okay? The one who is the firstborn, you know. The one who manifests at the beginning of the Jagad. So then you could say, if you say, the one who is born at the beginning of the Jagat, that's another one. Adi Jaha means firstborn. But if you say Jagat Adi, means the beginning of the Jagat, Atat Purusha, the beginning of the Jagat, the one who is born, Jaha. So when Jaha comes at the end of a compound, the one who is born. So the one who is born at the beginning of the Jagat. Jagat Adi Jaha. Okay? Then, repeat after me. Hiranya Garbha Rupena.
Hiranya Garbha Rupena.
Jagadadau.
Jagadadau.
Utpadyate.
Utpadyate.
Swayamiti.
Swayamiti.
Jagadadi Jaha.
Jagadadi Jaha.
So, Hiranya Garbha Rupena, in the form of Hiranya Garbha, or in, you can say as Hiranya Garbha, right? So, Rupena means form or nature. But in the instrumental, that ittam bhave, which is telling kind of the nature or how it is, you can say, instead of saying by means of Hiranyagarbha, you say in the form of Hiranyagarbha or as Hiranyagarbha. Okay? So Hiranyagarbhena Jagadadau. Adau, that Adau ending is the locative singular of Adi. So Jagadadau, at the beginning of the creation, in the form of Hiranyagarbha, or as Hiranyagarbha, so Hiranyagarbhena Jagadadau Utpadyate, so is born, itself is born, or he is born, he himself is born. That Swayam makes it reflexive. He himself is born at the beginning of the creation in the form of Hiranyagarbha. Hiranyagarbhena Rupena Jagadadau Utpadyate Swayam Iti. And then the iti thus jagadadi jaha. Okay? And so, because Hiranyagarbha is sukshma, Hiranyagarbha, when Ishwara becomes manifest, Ishwara becoming manifest, first it manifests as the subtle. The name for the subtle, right, the subtle form is Hiranyagarbha. Sometimes Hiranyagarbha is called Brahmaji. And then Virat, after that, the physical body. So Vishnu means when the whole creation is manifest. Ishwara with the manifest creation is Vishnu. But in that process of coming into manifestation, Sukshma comes first. So that means the firstborn, right, is going to be Hiranyagarbha and then Virat. The Hiranyagarbha, having gone through the Panchikarana, becoming fivefold, the tamas aspect of the subtle elements becoming fivefold, called Panchikarana, becomes Virat. So Vishnu, it says Vishnu is Ishwara, right? So Vishnu, the whole Vishnu, first becomes manifest as Brahmaji, as Hiranyagarbha, and then as Virat. So here, as a name for Vishnu, the one who is the firstborn. Firstborn is Hiranyagarbha.
Isn't there something more subtle than Hiranyagarbha, the
Karana Sharira? Yeah, the Karana Sharira is Ishwara. The Karana Sharira is Maya in unmanifest condition. Right?
Oh, Karana Sharira is unmanifest. So the first manifest is Hiranyagarbha.
Yes, exactly. See if Swamiji says, Brahman looked at from the standpoint of the Karana Upadi, the unmanifest world is called Ishwara. The same Brahman looked at from the standpoint of the Sukshma Upadi, the subtle world, is called Hiranyagarbha, and from the standpoint of the Stula Upadi, the gross conditioning agent, physical conditioning agent, the gross world is called Virat. Okay? It's nice. Because the subtle universe is born before the gross, and at every level Brahman inheres in the creation, it is said that the Lord is as if born at the beginning of the Jagat as Hiranyagarbha, and hence is Jagadadija. Right, when the creation first comes into manifestation, it's Sukshma. The name for that is Hiranyagarbha, sometimes called Brahmaji. Okay? Let's do another one. Anagaha.
Anagaha.
Agham. Navidyate.
Navidyate.
Asyeti.
Asyeti.
Anagaha.
Anagaha.
Agha means papa, literally. Agha is papa, sin. So agham, papa, navidyate asya. For him, there is no agha, there is no papa. The one who is free, for him there is no papa. Okay? Iti anagaha. So agaha, unagaha. The un negates the agaha. It's a bahuvrahi, the one for whom there is no papa, papa. Actually, Swamiji says something I liked in this. I mean, I always like it, but something.
For him, there is no papa.
For him, there's. Well, that's what he's talking about. Let's just read through this together. Aga is papa. Bhagawan is anaka, the one who is free from papa. By understanding Bhagawan as yourself, you too become anaga, free from papa. Does that mean that Bhagawan is subject to punya because all his karmas are punya karmas? No. The extended meaning of agha would be anything that causes birth and so includes punya also. The Lord is neither a doer nor an enjoyer and therefore ever free from not only papa but also from punya. The understanding that I am free from doership and enjoyership and that I am satyam jnanam anantam brahma will make one anaka. Swamiji actually gives talks about this quite a bit. In a couple of paragraphs, something that he'll often expand upon. It's important, actually, for your own shanti. So by gaining the knowledge of Bhagawan, one is free not only from papa, but from punya also. Because punya and papa are results of karma.
Same sides.
Right, yeah. Yeah, different sides of the same coin. So till then, one is under the spell of punya and papa. This is nice too. Sri Krishna addresses Arjuna as Anaka. Oh, Anaka, right? Sinless one, and says in the Gita, even if you are a papa kritama, a papa kritama is one tama, but tama means superlative. Tara is comparative, tama is superlative. So even if you are the greatest of papa krits,
exalted among the poppies.
Yeah, exactly. Here's what he says: the most exalted among those who commit papa karma, wrong actions, you will cross everything by the boat of knowledge. The Shrutis talk of him as apahata papma, the one who is free from papa. So sometimes Swamiji will give some in some of his talks. He'll talk about guilt or remorse or regret, this type of thing, that is kind of natural to the human condition, to have remorse or regret or to feel badly about your papa karmas and all of that. That's fine. That is all fine. It's natural within duality, but that sense of being a papi or punya is something that you resolve into the truth of your being, which is neither. The truth of your being, you're not a papi, and you're not also the, what do you call that, positive. You're not a papi, you're not a punyavada. You're not one who has punya or papa. Right? Brahman doesn't have punya or papa. Brahman doesn't have karma. Brahman's not a doer or an enjoyer, so your being is always free of that. That doesn't give you license within Dharma, within Ishwara, to commit punya and papa. If you're a jnani, if you're a jivanmukta, your mind is mature, and for whatever reason you do some sort of a papa karma, within relative reality you will evoke the results of that papa karma. It's not like because you have jnanam, or you recognize yourself free of punya and papa, that you are in terms of karma within duality, that the jiva is free from the results of your actions. You're not free from it. It doesn't have anything to do with your being. there was billions upon billions of actions going on every second, Brahman is not engaged in that. Right? Yourself is not engaged in that. But within duality, the upadis are engaged in that. And so you don't the upadis do not transcend the laws of karma.
But you wouldn't call it a jiva if you have...
True. Sometimes you're using the jivatvam we say is degdabija. What we say that is that when someone gains knowledge, the body is there, the ahankara, the sense organs are there, the mind is there, the ahankara is there. I'm going to the store, I feel like this. But it's degdabija, means it's mitya, right? It has the status of mitya. So that's why there's a famous verse in the Gita, you know, seeing I don't see, hearing I don't hear, walking I don't walk, blinking my eyes I don't blink my eyes. Right? Because the Atma, you, are not doing that, but the Upadhi is very engaged in that, and the Upadhi has you for its being. Right? So from the standpoint of the Upadhi, you're doing all of these things. But from the standpoint of yourself, you're not doing anything. So
a jnani can still do actions, which can be judged in the relative sense as pap?
Yeah, they're, it's not about judgment. This is the best way to understand it, I think. Whether I'm a jnani or an ajnani, if I stick my hand in fire, it will burn. Right? If I'm drinking water, I'll taste the water, like that. So the natural laws that include punya and papa apply in terms of what we call drishta pala, immediate result. For jnani, they're not going to be, they may be accruing punya and papa, but punya and papa will manifest, and will go into the sanchitta karma and would manifest in the next birth. But for jnani, there is no next birth because the karta is gone. At the time, once the prarabdha karma has exhausted itself, there's no ajnanam to keep any type of jiva there. The jiva is really a product of ajnanam that causes a false identification with the upadhi or with your raga, dvesha, all of these things. But even while living, that identification is no longer there, right? Even while living. But it's there in like a bird seed form because you still have a mind and you still have a body. You still have a sense of doership, a sense of enjoyership from the standpoint of the upadhi. So you could say, enjoying, I'm not enjoying. Doing, I'm not in. I'm doing, I'm not doing. Because to say the doing, that's from the standpoint of the upadhi. If I'm walking across the room from the standpoint of the upadhi, I'm walking across the room. From the standpoint of myself, I'm never moving at all. And both are aparoksha. Means both are directly just an experiential reality because yourself is self-evident, right? Yourself is self-evident, so it's always there. And in fact, as your mind settles down, your own being becomes more and more dominant in terms of its the buddhi enjoying. The buddhi is enjoying yourself more and more. Just like when your mind is very, very quiet, is enjoying shanti, what is the experience filling the mind? When the mind is calm, not engaged in worry and all of these things, then what is the swabhava that is dominant in the mind is that of your own being. But when your mind is, say, hurting or reacting or going through this or going through that, that as though becomes dominant. Actually, for a jnani, it never becomes dominant. Because, but that's because whatever is there is welcomed, and so that stress is not there. But when the mind is stressed, and then identifying and creating a web of suffering around the initial suffering, then that suffering becomes what is dominant experientially, and your being is still there in exactly the same way, and experiential, not as an object, but as its very swarupa. But it's in competition with the pain or the reaction or the depression or whatever is going on in the mind. But what about when there is no stress, when you have no stress or rejection of the experiences internally or externally that are coming your way? If they're welcomed, there is no stress, and so your own Swarupa still remains dominant. Because I'm not pushing away those sensations.
So then there can be no volition to produce an action which would be wrong action.
Well, now that's a little bit of a different topic, so let me just address that in a couple of sentences. Dharma is the very nature of your being. Dharma is the whole manifestation of Ishwara, Ishwara Srishti, is Dharma. Okay? So what is natural to you on every level is Dharma. That's what's natural. A Dharma is a product of Ajnanam. A Dharma comes about because I projected my Ananda, you know, onto something in the world. And that Ananda, a deeper way to say it is I projected myself onto something in the world. And then I need to go after it. I want this. I need this to be happy. And then, depending upon my value system, a dharma can take second place to the fulfillment of my desire. When that's the case, then I'm subject to a dharma, right? And so then I can fall into, you know, painful states of mind and painful situations. But what if I'm not subject to a dharma? Because I don't need anything. If I get this, it's fine. If I don't get this, it's fine. But what is primary for me actually is dharma, because that's what's natural. There's no one, no ajnanam, self-ajnanam, there's self-ignorance there to cause me to project my well-being onto the world, so I don't have fear. This fear is a huge thing to understand, this abhayam. Abhayam means being free from fear. Every time that you find yourself acting out in one way or another, there is some fear there. And fear in the sense of, if I don't get this, I won't be happy. If I allow this person to do such and such, you know, it will take something away from me. So that understanding of abhayam, both in, let me not be, the abhayam vow of sannyasa, let me not be afraid of any being, and let no being be afraid of me. You have to master gain that jnana nishtha that allows you to say in a real way, I am not afraid of any being, because my ananda, my being, is not at stake in any way. That's the only way you can say that. If your being is at stake, if your wholeness is at stake, if your own svabhava is at stake, there's fear, because you don't want to lose yourself or any part of yourself. Part means there's no parts to the self, but feeling of having your existence taken away, having your ananda taken away. You know, that's especially in our normal circumstances, a fear of somebody taking away our wholeness or our fullness. And so we react and strike out in so many ways, but that fear is at the core of it. So this vow of the sannyasi, for somebody who's ready to take sannyasa, or who is committed to gaining jnana nishtha, total clarity in their knowledge, and they're ready for that. That vow, the abhaya vow, is central to sannyasa. Let me not be afraid of any being, and let no being be afraid of me. No being to be afraid of me. I can't be afraid of any being, because they'll be afraid of you if you're rejecting. Nobody wants to be rejected. That creates fear in them. Okay? If you feel rejected by somebody, there's a fear, because rejection, you know, is painful. Yourself is being rejected. Yourself is never being rejected. No, yourself is always the same. But that's why when we did the little meditation earlier, you know, when we learn how to do that welcoming, and then after having done that, had whatever dialogue is necessary, then to bring in your knowledge and recognize the fact that you can never be, the wholeness of your being cannot never be touched in any way. That's really beautiful part. Once you take care of the samsara, the duality, then to bring in your knowledge. Taking care of the duality means doing that inner child work, or talking to the feeling, or, you know, actually understanding what it is that's scaring you, and soothing that, and then bringing in the truth, then bringing in your knowledge that in fact you can never be harmed in any way. But that's something not, it's not just words, it's recognizing.
Okay. Hope is the same as fear.
In a way, you when you're hoping, again, hope and fear can be dug to be just means that something that can be dismissed and it's not a big deal, but hope actually can stop you. I hope things will get better, or I hope I'm going to get this, or I hope it'll work out in this way. That means my focus is on something that's not here yet, mm-hmm. which means that I'm missing a lot. I'm missing being with everyone in the life that I have right now. So it means you're missing your life, because mm-hmm. the focus is on something that's not here.
I guess fear is in its wake.
Yeah, it's true. Do you want to take like just a couple of minutes and chant the first four verses of this? We're going to start to do that. Now, I have it marked out. It won't take very long.
Yeah.
The first four verses of Vishnu Sahasranama from Om Vishwam. In this book, it's on 593.
It's on page 8 on the handouts.
And page 8 on the handouts. I slowed it down just a little bit. We're going to start doing this, trying to do this every day, so we have to watch our time. Every time we come. Here. Everybody have it? Page 593?
One.
In your book? Oh, but do you know the Sanskrit? Do you have the...
Yeah.
Can you read that?
In the very beginning or the second part?
Second part.
Second part.
Yeah. A few pages for it.
Okay.
You got it?
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Vincham Vishnurva Shakara
Bhuta Bhavya Bhavat Prabhu
Bhuta 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 Bhavana Bhutatma Paramatma Chamuktanam Paramagatih Avyaya Purusha Sakshi Shetvajno Charadevacha Yogo Yoga Vidaneta Pradana Purusheshwaraha Narasimha Bhavun Shriman Keshava Purushottamaha Sarva Sharva Shivastanu Bhutadir Nidhurvaya Sambhavo Bhavano Bharata Prabhava Prabhurishwaraha Swayambhu Shambhuraditya Pushkaraksho Mahaswanaha Anadi Nidhano Data Vidata Daturuttamaha Aprameyo Rishikesha Padmanabho Maraprabhu Vishwakarma Manustrashka Stavishtasamirodhruvaha Akrahyashashvatam Krishna Lohitaksha Pratardhanaha Prabhutasthitakupama Vittam Mangalam Paramun Ishanah Pranadah Prano Jeshtashreshta Prajapatihi
You know what we can do? I just thought of this. Every time when we go to Vishnu Sahasranama, we'll start with this. We'll chant it, and then we'll add, and we'll chant the first 16. That's where we are. Mm-hmm. It'll only take, what, 5 minutes? We'll chant the first 16 verses every time at the beginning, and then we'll go to the verse that we're on. That way we'll always do it.
Yeah, kind of like what we do with the Rudram.
Yes. That'll be nice, because we'd like to just be able to chant. A lot of people memorize this. That's almost too much for me, but who knows. It'd be nice to, you can at least learn it well enough that you can chant it along. When they're chanting, you know it well enough to chant along when somebody's chanting. Or enough just to read it, even. Yeah. Okay, let's say a prayer. swasti prajapya paripalayantam nyayena margena mahim mahishah go brahmane yashubhamastu nityam loka samasta sukhino bhavantu kale varshatu parjanyah prativesasya shalini desho yam shobarahitah brahmana santu nirbhayah om sarve bhavantu sukhinah sarve santu niramayah sarve bhadrani pashyantu ma kaschit dukha bhag bhavet asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya mrityorma amritam gamaya om purnamadah purnamidam purnat purnamudachyate purnasya purnamadaya purnameva vashishyate om shanti 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 hari om shri gurubhyo namaha hari om